This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. I'll let you know that the first part of the show is brought to you by Pirtle and Howerton Automotive. And they're at 2006 North Main Street in Shevable, Tennessee. And if you would just take about a 10-15 minute drive down 231 South, just before you get into downtown Shevable, they're on their left. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, and you don't mind the short, beautiful ride out towards Shevable, and if you won't mind the really nice ride coming back with a brand new car, whether it be a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, then why don't you just take off today? It's a beautiful day. I've been out most of the day. It's absolutely gorgeous. And what a good day to be going out and trade in your old clunker that you've got now and come back in a really, really nice vehicle. And if you'd like, you can call 1-800-264-6800 before you leave. That's toll-free. Or you can pick them up on PirtleHowerton.com. And I guarantee you, you'd be glad you did. I have a good friend that's on with me today. And one, I think this must be print and media week, because we had two legends on yesterday. Dan Whittle and Ron Fryer, and have Mike West on today. And he was one of the people in the Daily News Journal, I guess, when Morris first took over, weren't you?
Yes, I soon joined the staff right after he bought the News Journal back in 1973, I guess.
Yeah, I remember those days. And what in the world, did you, are you one of the MassCom people? Did you go to school at MTSU at MassCom?
I sure did. I was one of the first graduates.
Oh, wow. When was that?
1973.
Oh, my goodness. So that was the start of the mass media, which it's really taken off. And from what I can understand, it's one of the largest and one of the more well-known MassComs in the country right now.
Yes, it is. It's hard to believe, but it truly is. It's gone from just a handful of people to a huge department with a nice building and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I met the gentleman that was over it yesterday, and seemed like a very, very nice guy. And what in the world got you interested in being in print and being a person, a journalist that has so many different facets that he has to work with?
Well, really, it's sort of funny. I started it as a dare, really.
Uh-oh.
I had a friend who was working on the student newspaper at MTSU, and mm-hmm. he said, you know, I can do it. You can probably do it. And he kept daring me till I did it, and that was the start.
Was there anything interesting? Can you remember some of the things that you actually started doing when you were at that level?
My first interview was with Miss MTSU. She had just been selected a day or two before.
Uh-huh.
And it was so difficult. I didn't know what to ask her, and I didn't know how to write it. And the story never ran, but I worked on that story for days.
Did you select that particular thing?
No, they assigned it to me.
I can understand why you would have difficulty in it, because, I mean, what do you go up and you, somebody that's just won a title like that, I wouldn't know how to start.
Well, I didn't either. But we managed to struggle through it. Later in school, I ended up being the sponsor and host of the Miss MTSU pageant. So,
oh, my goodness.
It was quite a change.
Well, you just kind of grew a little bit.
A little bit.
Uh-huh. And when you first started looking for a place to go, a venue to use your talents, did you first select the Daily News Journal, or did you put your resumes out like a lot of people did in different areas?
Well, I first went with the New York Times and Washington Post. And I never heard anything from the Washington Post, but I got a nice rejection letter from the New York Times.
Well, you wanted to start right at the top, didn't you?
Yep.
I have known you a long time, and you always have the sharpest sense of humor, but sometimes it's a little bit dry because you're so bright. It's pretty hard for me to assimilate sometimes. But when you were on the law enforcement beat for the Daily News Journal, I always enjoyed you coming over, because whether I was having a bad day or whatever, and there's a lot of complicated things going on, you always were able to put things in a proper perspective, because you didn't take a whole lot of things serious.
That's true, I'm afraid. But I took my job very seriously, but we had a lot of fun getting there to the end result. I remember a lot of things that went on. That one of my favorite things was to go over to the jail, and this is the old jail on
400 West Main Street.
400 West Main Street. Mm-hmm. And I would sneak in and go back to the kitchen and see what was left over from breakfast, usually. And sometimes there was some good stuff. So I'd have a little breakfast and then journey in to see the sheriff.
Mm-hmm. And at that time, it was Robert Goodwin.
Yeah, that was true.
Robert T. Goodwin, Robert Goodwin was the sheriff when you first started, and then Craig Snell.
Yep.
And I can remember those days, because a lot of people don't realize that a jail has, and running a jail has really changed over the years.
Oh, it has.
And the jail on 400 West Main Street was basically a meeting place for everybody in the community.
Yeah.
Because being on 400, people could walk from the square or anywhere else and go in and try to find out what was going on. It was probably the gossip capital of the world right at that time.
It definitely was. Mm-hmm. There was people that had made it their morning rounds. Mm-hmm. They would come by and see what's going on and sit around and talk. And I met some interesting people there.
Yeah, so did I.
I'm sure.
Of course, you got to know the cook there firsthand, right?
Right.
And do you remember what the main dishes were usually when you went in the old jail?
What I remember is the hash brown potatoes and the bacon.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you're talking about breakfast.
Breakfast, yeah.
And you probably don't remember much about the lunch, but sometimes we would have noodles and tomatoes. But what I remember the most is it was really healthy food, because, I mean, you could put on weight right quick by watching the lard on top. But back then, I mean, we were... people didn't make a whole lot of money back then.
That's true. You didn't,
as a journalist, and we didn't in law enforcement either. And a lot of times we would take advantage of the food there, and it was fun, because people, it didn't matter whether they were attorneys or just people who had businesses on the square or people who knew us from out in the county, they would stop by and have conversations with us, and a lot of times you were able to be there when they would. And it was so interesting. If I were you and all those interesting people that you got to meet, and I'm not going to call them characters, they were just interesting.
Yeah.
I believe you could have a bestseller.
Maybe so. I don't know if people would believe it. Some of the characters.
Now, there was a great relationship between people, the reporters, and the law enforcement people back then, and all the emergency services, and you got to run on a lot of calls.
I certainly did. Now it wouldn't be possible, but
no.
You know, I went to a lot of crime scenes and spent hours at crime scenes.
Do you remember any particular ones that you can remember that you found a little different or more fascinating than others?
Well, I suppose the Laura Salmon case was one of the most interesting. And I went out there that day, and saw your officers working the crime scene mm-hmm. and searching for items. And
were you there with us when we got the call? I can't remember, but I do remember you being there.
I don't think I was there, but we, you know, the newspaper office was close to the sheriff's department, so mm-hmm. we could race over there really quickly. Mm-hmm. And I got out there.
Was that your first really, really bad one that you were at?
No, not really, but it was bad because she was a young person mm-hmm. and who I sort of knew. Mm-hmm. I knew her parents, and it was just really shocking.
Now you. Her mom, of course, was a teacher,
yeah.
and a real, real sweet lady, and but it was so. I've never seen a case like that. This really slap a community in the face as hard as that one did at that time.
That's
it,
true.
It was one of those that the media really ran with simply because she was so young and it was such a gruesome crime.
Yeah.
And it was one of those at that time it was very, very hard to solve at that time.
That's true, but y'all eventually did it.
Well, you know, it was one of those things, it's just like anything else. If you do it right to start with, whether you have the tools or the technology or not, eventually something the pieces will go into place, and it took a long time, as everybody knows, but I was so happy, and I was up there when they actually got the verdict, and I don't think I have been involved in some really emotional cases over the years, but that was one of those that really got to me for the simple reason that I just couldn't let it go out of my mind, and I think a lot of people were that way too. And the officers that worked it, both the initial group and the ones that were in the cold case, just did a super job, and I think that the community was very proud of them.
Yes, they were. It was an amazing case from start to finish.
Now, when you first started, who was the editor and the publisher over there at the Daily News Journal?
Harry Hicks was the editor. He's the one that hired me, and mm-hmm. Dick Bell was the publisher. And Mr. Bell was sort of a holdover from the previous owners, and he was a good guy.
Well, it was a different atmosphere. It was more laid back then.
Yeah.
I don't think you were under as much pressure as most of them are right now.
That's true. And we had very few people. At one point, I was the only reporter, and I was covering everything. But that was just for a short while we got another reporter hired. But we were always short-staffed, but we scrambled and managed to get everything covered pretty much.
Now, when you went to Mass Comm, of course, you learned a lot about using the tools of the trade. But I envision when you first come on, especially in a smaller place like this, that you've got a lot of OJT simply because you're not used to dealing with those things,
true.
The personal part of the things and like that. Do you feel like that you gained in maybe in performance of your job as time went on with the journal?
Oh, tremendously. When I first started, you know, I'd written a lot of stories and done editorials and written columns, but mm-hmm. it was nothing like getting out there and really covering something. Like the first day of my job, I had to go out to an auto accident. There was a fatality out on 231. And I was scared to death. And I didn't get close enough to see the victims, but I couldn't sleep for a week after that.
That's probably the first traumatic thing that you had ever seen like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and it was first day at work.
That's what a lot of people don't understand. When you're in the businesses like that, you see things that most people can't even imagine when you're talking about the brutality of it and the emotional things that run through you. And how in the world are you able to keep that really sensitive part of you out of your stories? Because I know that I would imagine it'd be almost like like writing a novel rather than putting it down in newspaper if you start to do that?
Well, part of it is your training. Now, we were trained to, you know, write things in a particular order. We had what was called the inverted pyramid style of writing, where you had all your hard-hitting facts in the start, and you would just add stuff down to the end.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped to organize stuff, but a lot of it just was give and take with the editors. You know, I'd come in, I have a story, and would write it up, maybe a little bit too gruesome.
Mm-hmm.
And the editor would say, well, you know, we don't really need to put that in there. And after a little bit of that, I sort of learned the boundaries and was able to write a good story that had information, but not too much blood and gore.
Did you ever feel like that maybe they cut too much out of your articles and maybe and maybe they were not at the quality that you felt like the first one was?
Yeah, you know,
and I don't want to put you in a spot.
Those stories are your pride and joy for the moment.
Right.
They might not be the greatest story in the world, but to you it seems, yeah, this is top news. And I'll never forget that one time I wrote this long, long story about a union situation in town.
Hmm.
And I didn't really structure the story correctly. I didn't have both sides balanced out.
Mm-hmm.
And they cut the story in half when they put it in the paper, so all the stuff from the opposing side was not in there.
Uh-oh.
And I got called in and chewed out by the publisher and everything, and I said, but I wrote it that way. Yeah. But I didn't balance it out.
You know, that's not unusual to be taken to task, because people look at it in their own version when they're reading the paper.
That's true.
And that's what makes it very difficult, I'm sure, to be a journalist, because there are so many different aspects that are covered by people who want to see it in a certain way. And I've always said, you know, I know a lot of friends of mine that over the years have gotten mad because there's been bad press on them.
Yeah.
In their mind. Of course, I never had any. I was very fortunate. But I always took it that the people who are the most concerned about the details are the ones that are being written about.
That's true.
And people get so uptight over that. And I always said, you know, if people could just be a little bit looser and don't take themselves too seriously, a lot of times they can see things differently.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it, too, is the time. You know, you might be covering something and have to have it in the paper an hour later.
Mm-hmm.
And you just maybe don't do your best job. And you get in there and write it up, and mm-hmm. it's done. So it's there's a lot of pressure from time that comes into a newspaper.
Do you think we would be better served if they would give the paper a little bit more time before you go to your deadline to make sure that you get the stories right? There's one thing that's always hacked me off about when you hear somebody come on and say, well, you heard it first, or you see it first here, and then it has all types of errors in it, but mm-hmm. just simply because they want to rush
to get there first.
And did you really have that much competition here in this area for the stories?
Well, we didn't at first. Then a Nashville Tennessean got sort of interested in what we were doing, and they started sending a beat reporter down and covering some mainly crime news. Mm-hmm. And they would come out in the morning, and we would come out in the afternoon. So they sort of had a jump on us a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So that became a big struggle to try to hold back the news one afternoon.
Well, the radio and the local paper here, you would see them almost at every major scene.
Yeah.
And back then, like you were saying, we would rarely see anybody from the Nashville venue down here.
Yeah.
And you guys were pretty much covering it all. And I think that it really made the local paper and the local radio stations extremely popular back then, because
really
that's
did.
Where people would get all their information. And I can tell you right now, you guys did a great job back then, because you were never adversarial. Now, we might not like what you put in, but you put in what you thought was the right thing, and there was never any problem. I mean, I can't think of one instant back then in those particular days. We're talking about in the 70s and the 80s where there was any thought of us against them or whatever. I mean, you guys were always willing to work within our restraints, and then we understood and tried to understand where you were coming from.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing was to get the right story out to the people.
That's the truth. And that's not always easy.
No.
But we tried our best.
Now, when the competition started coming, you can remember, and I can remember, when the Tennessee and the Banner were top guns in Middle Tennessee.
Right.
They really were. And they were newspapers of great influence, as everybody knows. If they've ever read the Hopewell Box that Jimmy Squires wrote many years ago, you can see where the power comes from. I mean, we've all seen the great movies, Citizen Kane and some of the others, but people don't realize how much influence the print has or has had over the years. Do you think that has continued on, or have the airways kind of taken over a lot of their, power that they've had
power.
And the prestige? Yeah.
I think the airways have done that a good bit, particularly television. And back in the day, we would, when the Nashville media started coming in, WGNS and the News Journal sort of combined efforts on a lot of coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And we, in fact, Dan James was a reporter then.
I remember. Yeah.
And I would, when we had the tornadoes back in the 70s, Dan and I went all over covering that, and I was live on the radio, and then we, you know, combined for the newspaper.
Wow. So when you combine your services, do you feel like doing both did you feel like that improved your ability to work within that area?
Yeah. We could get information out quickly that way.
Well, we're going to talk about quickly in just a minute.
All right.
I want to let you know that part of this show is brought to you by At Home Care, and they're located at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And what they do is, if you're no longer able to take care of your duties at home, and you feel like that you may have to move out or may have to go to some other area, give them a call. It's 713-4639, 713-4639. They will come in your home 24/7, take care of your normal home duties and even others, and they will do everything that they can to keep your life at the highest level, and your quality will be just like you hoped it would always be. And you can rely on them to make sure that everything is taken care of, and you can still go about your life without a whole lot of stress. And that's what we're looking for, is quality life as we get older and we start having problems. And you can pull them up on the internet at www.athomecaretennessee.com. or on the telephone, 713-4639. Give them a call, and I'll guarantee you, you'll be glad you did.
Hello, this is Jim Bryan at First Bank.
And I'm Chuck Lewis. First Bank presents Good Neighbor Events, news of what our local schools, churches, and community groups are doing.
This is Thursday, September the 29th, and the musical Godspell continues tonight through Sunday night at 7 o'clock at the Fellowship United Methodist Church, Now, this is the 70s off-Broadway hit based on the Gospel of Matthew, and it features that popular song, Day by Day, the musical Godspell, tonight through Sunday night at 7 o'clock at the Fellowship United Methodist Church. They also have 2 o'clock afternoon matinees on Saturday and Sunday. The Fellowship United Methodist Church is at 2511 Highway 99. For information, call 893-4659. And tonight is True Blue Thursday. The Blue Democrats have fun at Fanatics over at the Doubletree Hotel, 7 o'clock tonight. And the Mid-State Single Square Dance Club invite you to join them for some good fun and exercise, 7:30 tonight at the St. Clair Street Senior Center. Now remember, in the morning, the Farmers Market, 6 to 11, right there at the Lane Agri Park at 315 John Rice Boulevard, next to Paws and just down from Sam's. Farmers Market in the morning, 6 to 11. Remember the Red Cross Blood Drive today from 9 this morning until 6 o'clock tonight. And if you can't make that blood drive today, going on until 6 o'clock tonight, by the way, the Red Cross is at 501 Memorial Boulevard, the former Chamber of Commerce building. Join the Kittrell Volunteer Fire Department for an evening of ghoulish games, freaky fun, and frightening food from 4 until 9 this Saturday night. And that's at the fire station, 8067 the Woodbury Highway. Good Neighbor Events brought to you by First Bank.
It's been a busy week, and it's finally winding down. Too tired to cook supper? Stop by Kirk & Burt's and pick up our family pack to go. A pound of barbecue, buns, and your choice of side, all for just $9.99. Kirk & Burt's, 517 Kaysen Lane, just down from the theater.
We make important choices in our lives every day. You owe it to yourself to make an informed decision about where to receive cancer treatment. The Cancer Center at Middle Tennessee Medical Center offers the area's only accredited program. That means it meets the high standards set by the Commission on Cancer. We consider it a blessing to provide you with the very best care available. To locate an MTMC physician, call 284-LIFE. Why choose any place else?
It's time. Catch the energy. Blue Raider College football.
Don't miss the Blue Raiders blackout game against rival the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers Thursday night, October 6th at MTSU's Floyd Stadium. Official blackout t-shirt and ticket packages are available now at selected locations for only $15. Tickets are on sale now.
Visit GoBlueRaiders.com or call 1-888-YES-MTSU. Tackle boredom. Catch the energy. Go Blue Raiders.
Sausage and biscuits, gravy and grits, home ground, homemade, it'll get you fits. Blueberry pancakes and corn cakes too, I'm a-licking my lips, now how about you? Readyville, readyville, readyville mill, I said get yourself to the readyville mill.
Mike West, have you ever been to the readyville mill?
Yes, I was there last Saturday, in fact.
All right. I see. That's about half the guests I've had on have been out there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the most popular places, and Zach was telling me he's got to get out there. And as many times as he's heard us play this, I can't believe that he hasn't made the trip. And it's about a 10-15 minute drive down John Bragg Highway, and you'll turn left when you see the sign, about 2 more miles from there. And you'll go into as you saw it, and I know that you're a history buff, a mill that will be 200 years old next year. And Tom Brady went in and completely redid the whole place. It's absolutely beautiful. And, of course, you got the Stone River that runs by it. And the breakfasts there are out of this world. And they make everything. They have the grinder there and everything else. And I hope someday in the near future they're going to get the dam going back again. But it's such a nice place to go. And you can have a great time. If you want to call for any specific reasons, you can reach them at 563-6455. 563, and it's meal. www.readyvillemill.com on your internet, and I'll guarantee you everybody's been out there has returned simply because it's such a wonderful experience to go out there, and it's right there on the Cannon County Rutherford County border. I'm looking at Zach.
You've known right. him for years. Now you can visit with him every day. It's The Truman Show, continuing right now on WGNS, AM and FM.
Are you back with me, Zach? Now, when you go out there, Mike, I know that you love history. You are one of our history people that people go to when they try to find out some of the interesting things that have gone over in the past. Is there any certain areas that you're more interested in than others when we're talking about history of Rutherford County?
Well, really, I like just about anything that pertains to Rutherford County, but I guess the Civil War mm-hmm. is my biggest area of interest.
Is there any area more than others that kind of fires you up when you start reading about the history of this area?
Well, one thing that's very interesting was the occupation of the county mm-hmm. after the Battle of Murfreesboro. Mm-hmm. There's some really interesting stories that have not come out about it that are just sort of family legends, but there were really some hard times back then.
Yes, they were. And a lot of people don't realize that. We've had that, talked about that a number of times, about how difficult it was for the people who were living here back in the late 1860s, how difficult it was to get their places back going again. And they met a lot of opposition when they're trying to recreate what they had before. Yeah. And then, of course, many of them lost members of their families. And of course, it was just the whole world was destroyed for them, but yet the great story about it was that they were able to get back on their feet and become successful again against all odds.
That's true. And Murfreesboro, it took several decades though to really get it going. By the 1880s, mm-hmm. things were beginning to come back, but really it was about 1900. When Murfreesboro really start to get up and grow again.
Was there anything in particular that was able to help them get back going again and become a major area?
I think the railroad had as much to do with the survival as anything, because they got the railroad line going back, and that brought in revenue, customers, business, and it enabled people to ship their product mm-hmm. out to the south and north.
Do you remember, have you read anything at all about any of the historical epic things that went on as far as kind of like heroic things from some of the people here? Of course, we all know about Nathan Bedford Forrest and what he did.
Yeah. Well, there was quite a bit of that kind of thing. There was a lot of women who were heroic, particularly during the occupation. Mm-hmm. They would smuggle medicines, supplies, just about anything you could think of, cigars, in and out of the federal lines to Murfreesboro or to Nashville. There was a lot of passing back and forth between those two communities.
Now, how were they able to get access to all this stuff?
That's a good question. Well, some of their families were wealthy, mm-hmm. and they were able to get the stuff from down deeper south, and they would hide it on their crinoline skirts, and they would ride their buggies mm-hmm. into Nashville, and sometimes they would get caught and sometimes they wouldn't. But
were they treated different if they were caught as spies or doing things against the government?
The men, they were treated very harshly, mm-hmm. but women, they could usually get out of it. Some of them were imprisoned for a brief period, and some of them were sent out of state, in fact, to prison. But
were they sending it mostly to their family members or friends?
Trying to give them a boost? Yeah, that's what it was. Or get them some medicine they needed, or you know, that sort of thing.
Now, was this after the war that most of this was going on?
This was during the war.
During the war.
And somewhat after the war, during the occupation. Yeah, people don't realize that we were occupied here for a while.
And not only that, they really, I mean, you hear all these stories about how the North, the country started helping the South rebuild and all that. But a lot of that's not true, is it?
That's true. It's very true. A lot of it's not true.
In fact, they were working against them as far as trying to recover, and I guess they were still considered a deadly enemy and could rise up any time and have the war all over again. I don't know, but it was very difficult it wasn't one of those things where you look at and they sign a treaty and it's over with.
That's true. That there was a lot of people just trying to grub their way out of the situation. And Nathan Bedford Forrest, he's a controversial figure, but
yes,
he played a big role in all that. And it's still up to debate what the Ku Klux Klan meant then and, you know, what they were responsible for. But that story is still developing this many years later.
I kind of looked at them like, if you were in a different country, they were the underground, and they were the ones that were trying to keep a lot of atrocities from happening in the area that they were, their own particular country.
Yeah.
And I've always felt like that I guess to the victor goes the spoils. But I always felt like that they were a victim of that philosophy, and they were just trying to hold on to what they had at that time and keep so many terrible things from going on. And it's my understanding that after it started becoming more of a racial thing, that Nathan Bedford Forrest said, no, we're not going to have any part of that anymore. And I think it was more aimed at the people who were putting a lot of pressure, both physically and financially, on this area is the main reason, or what I can understand was the only reason they were trying to do it, just protect their own people down here.
In some cases, it was they acted as law enforcement. I know, and my family's originally from Cannon County, and the Klan, so to speak. I don't even know if they called themselves the Klan, but they did some of the law enforcement there. I know where my grandparents lived, there was a family that the father was a drunk and didn't do anything and beat the kids and all that. And the Klan rode in and took the kids out, got them a new place to stay. They warned him. They didn't physically beat him up or anything. They dragged him out of the house and all that. But they straightened that situation out.
Yeah, I've heard of a lot of instances like that. Of course, it's the ones who did the things that were so terrible that really... it's just like anything else. After the war, all of that should have been disbanded out and done away with. And war brings terrible times, and it brings extraordinary times, and a lot of times it puts you in situations that you would never even dream of being in, and sometimes it's just one of those things that it's hard for us to understand what all those people went through back then.
That's very true, and
it's hard to make judgment on those people because we weren't there. We weren't involved in all the social things that were going on and the harm of so many people that because they had taken one side or the other, whether it been for the North or the South, that they were going to be prosecuted or having to lead terrible lives simply because of it. And that's one thing that's really terrible about a civil war, because it gets so personal more than anything. And
that's true.
I think that's one bad thing about it. How would you like to have been covering the war back then?
Oh, it'd been interesting. You know, that's one of the first modern war coverage, really, because of the telegraph.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that we had a lot of coverage back then.
Oh, yeah. The Battle of Stones River made it in the new front page in the New York Times just two, 3 days after the battle.
Hmm. Did they actually have reporters out in the field back then?
Yeah, they did.
You know, we never hear about that, or at least I never have.
Yeah, they would follow. In fact, they had some photographers out, but they hadn't come up with the process of printing a photo in a newspaper yet. So they would do sketches mm-hmm. and print those.
Did the newspapers have a lot of influence on the war?
Really, they served more of a cheerleading function back then.
Hmm.
You had your Southern newspapers. They had the Daily Rebel in Murfreesboro. And they would just sort of print war news from across the region based on a sort of Southern perspective. You know, everything's great.
Mm-hmm.
And the Union newspapers did the same sort of thing. So you had to sort of read in between the lines to find out what was really going on.
Did they get to interview the generals and the people that were influential in the war?
Well, some of the newspaper people stayed around the generals, and they mm-hmm. but they didn't usually appear in interview fashion in the story. They mm-hmm. may give them a tip about something, and they would write it. They would write it like they had witnessed it. Mm-hmm. Really, not quoting anybody much.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Mike West.
HGTV, the leader in home design and know-how, has joined Shaw Floors, the leader in flooring and city tile and floor covering, the largest flooring retailer in our area, to bring you HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw Collection. Doug Young with City Tile.
Come to City Tile and see the new selections of the HGTV products exclusively at City Tile.
Your HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw authorized retailer. Visit citytile.net. City Tile and Floor Covering.
Is your energy bill creeping up on you? Cold weather giving you a scare? Now's the time to get your heating and air system up to par for winter weather. Perhaps you need a new system. You can get a York heating and cooling system installed in your home for as little as $99 per month and no money down. You'll be able to save that and possibly more on your energy bill. Call Precision Air at 896-2785. That's 896-2785. Or visit precisionairtn.com.
He knows Rutherford County, and he knows the people of Rutherford County. Truman Jones, here on WGNS, AM and FM.
Welcome back with us. I want to let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive, and they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. For a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles. And if you get a used car or if you get a new car, you still have one advantage by going to Stan McNabb's, and that is that you will have free tires and oil changes for the life of that vehicle, and you can't beat that anywhere. Now, we were talking about something that you've mentioned that really interests me, is that there was a newspaper here in Murfreesboro, and it was called The Rebel. And when you said The Rebel, that meant that, of course, it was a paper that was probably here, and I'm not going to say for propaganda purposes, but try to uplift the spirits in this area. How did you run upon that? Because I've never heard that. Of course, that's not unusual for me.
Well, just doing research, they have it on a microfilm at Lineball Library.
Uh-huh.
And back during the Civil War centennial, they reprinted one issue of it and included it in the News Journal.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't even know how many editions they put out. I don't think it was that many, but it was interesting. It had war news and a few ads, and that was about it.
That had to have been on everybody's mind as far as people who were living during that time in the 1860s about the war and where it was going and how each battle. I can remember during World War II and in Korea, you go to a movie theater and you would see little things that would come from Lowell Thomas or some of the others like that would tell about how the war was going on and the great victories, and sometimes they would talk about the things that weren't all that good, and of course that'd make you feel a little worse, but most of the time they were trying to lift the spirits of people, and they wanted to show the battles that we had won, and that they were pressing Germany out of this place and Japan out of this place. But just to think about having those newspapers here and them being able to read them, that had been just like holding gold in your hands, because I mean that's the only thing that you had, I guess, back then to be able to get information from.
That's true. That and letters from your family. You'd get a letter from some relative across the state and could give you a little bits and pieces of information. But that was about it.
We have a caller on the line, Mike, so we're going to have to put our ears on. Caller, welcome aboard with Mike West.
And good afternoon, gentlemen. One quick question for Mike West. He has received many awards and commendations for the work that he has done in the newspaper business. Mike, is there any one award or any group of awards that you have received that stand out any more than the others? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
And that's Butch Campbell.
Well, Butch, probably the most prestigious award I've won is for editorial writing. I've won a couple of those, one at the News Journal and one at another paper I worked at. Mm-hmm. And those actually come with a little cash award.
Whoa.
little small cash award.
Pulitzer, huh?
Yeah. But those are probably my two biggest ones. Back when they had the tornado coverage, mm-hmm. The News Journal won a second place nationally in the Better Newspaper Contest.
Wow.
And I had part to do with that. I can't claim it all, but that was a good one then.
You know, I can't remember. I know I went out there when we had the tornadoes, but I can't remember where they were. Do you remember that?
Well, it was out there at Barfield Crescent sort of area, but I'm trying to think of the name of that subdivision.
That was in 70, what did you say, 72?
No, this was in
okay, yeah, all right. Now I got mixed up on the town.
Yeah.
All right, I know which one you're talking about. In fact, I went out there on that one. I was thinking about, I don't know where I got stuck in the early 70s. We've been all over the 1860s and the 70s.
Well, we had some tornado damage back in the early 70s.
But that particular tornado that we're talking about, or Butch was talking about, and you got the award on it, that was one of the most devastating tornadoes I've ever seen, simply because it would go through, tore up houses that were solid brick houses, and you wouldn't see anything left in a lot of them but the foundation. And sometimes it seemed like that was gone.
Yeah, in a couple cases the foundation was gone. It was horrible. It even sucked the grass out of the ground.
Mm-hmm. And you don't think of anything being that powerful, but I know it was a very difficult one for us to work, simply because there were a lot of people trying to get in there, and, mm-hmm. and a majority of them were just people coming by just to, they were just curious more than anything else. And we were trying to keep them out as much as we can. In fact, we tried to keep the media out, up to a point. Mm-hmm. And I remember that the governor came out there, and I believe, I can't remember, but I think it was that night. And the troopers came out with them, and they went through. But it was a terrible thing watching all those people out there just looking at the place that used to be their home, and they had everything invested in it, and then everything was gone.
That's true. People out there digging through the remains. Just, I remember there was a family out there and had a little boy. And they were digging through, and they found a little toy of his, and he was so happy to find that. And they were, you know, rejoicing that they had found that much.
Did you write about the story of the lady and her daughter? And they had been laying down... resting, I believe, and all of a sudden the mom got up, didn't hear anything, didn't know anything, but took the child underneath a safe place there, and if they had stayed in that room, they would have been gone.
Yeah.
And you think about miracles and things that happen that you don't really understand. And then you see something like that. Did you get that story, or
I didn't get that one, but
see? A good reporter would have got that one.
Yeah. But I got out to the actual scene that night. I just followed the state troopers in.
I remember it was like a wall. We were coming back from somewhere. There was about four of us in a car, and we saw it. And it was like you could drive toward that wall, but you couldn't drive through it because it was solid. I mean, it looked solid. Yeah, it really did.
It did.
Never seen anything like that in my life. And it didn't really fit what I'd always heard, that when you're going to see a tornado coming. I mean, it was just, I guess we think of Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, mm-hmm. but it was amazing things. I mean, you had boats that were just thrown up through trees, and we're talking about large boats. It was just nature just unleashed at one time. And those are the stories. I guess it's hard to write those stories because I don't see how you can become so be able to write a story without putting all the emotions in it that were inside you too.
Well, on some things it's easy. You're just out there and you're in a hurry to get the story, and you're just scrambling around, and you don't really have time to think about your own emotions. Mm-hmm. But on the other times, it's tough. Mm-hmm. You'll get involved in a story, you've followed it for months or years, and it's tough then.
Now, we'll get back. We were talking about deadlines earlier. And at what point do you let accuracy go by when you're trying to get the story first? Because you and I have known a lot of times where major stories were able to be utilized by a certain newspaper.
Yeah.
Where, and we remember the competitive areas. We remember the Tennessean, and we remember the Banner. And someone, say with one of the newspapers, we'll just say the Banner just for short, has a major story, but yet may be interfering with an investigation. And then they were able to hold that story up until the time that the other newspaper's deadline was gone by, and then utilize that to be able to break the story first. Do you see that happening? And at what point do you have to say, you know, this is the wrong thing to do?
Yeah. I think a lot of it's now most of your journalists are trained from journalism school, and you're just taught not to do that kind of thing. But back then, it was dog eat dog. Just getting the story and getting it first was the most important thing. And back then, when that story happened, I think you might be referring to the String Bean Ackerman case.
Yeah, yes, I could be.
And might be. And that was, that could have endangered the whole case, really.
And I'm surprised it didn't. And I was surprised there weren't any more fallouts off of that particular situation. Mm-hmm. But you and I have seen a lot of changes over the years, and I think that one of the biggest changes, of course, I think was, and I alluded more to Watergate than anything else, the closeness between the reporters and the people in power positions, politics, law enforcement, and all those other things, I think a lot of the relationship in all of those has changed over the years, and I still think that Watergate has a whole lot to do with it.
I think you're right. That redefined everything. And now the news media sort of has to hold itself to the same standards that held the White House back then, and it's tough to do.
Well, we're going to have to go, Mike, and it's been a pleasure for me to have you here. I haven't seen you in a long time. I enjoyed catching up with you again.
Yeah, it was great.
And I hope everything is going to go well for you. I really do. You're a class act and a great reporter, and you're a great editor, too. And I hope that you get back into the business sometime soon.
Hope so, too, Truman. I appreciate it. Enjoyed being on the show.
Enjoyed having you, big boy.